We'll get started. I'm sure people will trickle in as we go. Yeah, people were cracking jokes a little bit about lighting candles and such things. And so I help to engage in a community that is trying to, what I would say, live incarnationally with our community. And to me, the incarnation means meeting, the idea of meeting whatever is what we're talking about, where they are. And so in our context of Christianity, we might say that in the incarnation, Jesus met us where we are. And so we, when we gather together, the idea is that everyone's welcome to be where they are on their journey, and that we see in them knowledge, beauty, a voice, and we want to have that voice acknowledged in our conversations. And so I'm lighting candles today to remind us that, you know, thousands of years ago when people were discussing what faith was and what they were believing, those were sacred conversations. And oftentimes now conversations have removed themselves from kind of thinking of it being sacredness or even worshipful. So this is just a reminder to us that as we talk today, even talk about things that are challenging to us or we may not all agree, that we are holding this space in sacredness together. And I think, real quick, we should introduce ourselves because some of you don't know us. But I'm Anders, and I was once an intern pastor here at Holden Village about 2 years ago. And since have now worked in San Francisco as a mission developer for the ELCA in connection with the Episcopal Church, and do ministry primarily with folks who identify as spiritual but not religious in San Francisco. And someone who participates in the community has joined me, and I'll let her introduce herself.
And then I'll take it away, and we're going to tag team this and go back and forth in conversation. My name's Amy Farrow Weiss, and so one of the things that I have been working on over the last 2 years is that I've been working on activating and managing a community garden that was on the main street in my neighborhood that wasn't being utilized for 8 years. And I ended up talking with the church, it's a Presbyterian church that owns that property, and I asked them, you know, just starting off the conversation with a postcard in their mailbox, asking them, was it possible for me to talk to them about their good works in the neighborhood? I was raised as a Christian, so I know all the good terminology to use to get the ball rolling. And the good works, and you know, what is it that they had in mind for the space? And ever since they gave me the go-ahead, I've been doing that. We activated the space back in February 2013. And the whole time I've been really focused on how can this community garden be something that is in service to the needs of the community, not just something that makes wealthy people feel good about moving in next door to a subsidized housing project, which the church is adjacent to. There's a lot of new developments and condominiums that are being put in. And one of the things that I know is that although community gardens serve this wonderful purpose of beautifying space and connecting people with growing, that they're also used as a way for realtors to say, look at how great this space is, and then the property value goes up, and then the people who are poor are pushed out. And so one of the things that I know for sure is that there has to be a way to address the needs of the community, and part of that is creating jobs. And another part is really to get people to think about and embrace as potentially a career path, especially young people, good stewardship of the land. And so I've been thinking about that a lot, and one of the things, I read a book recently called The Soil Will Save Us, which I recommend everybody here reading, and it goes into the history of agriculture and even into the co-evolution of microorganisms and plants working together to lead to the complex organisms that are sitting here discussing all this today. And so I've been really enthusiastic about learning about the community under the ground and within the soil. And how in a teaspoon of soil there's 6 billion organisms right there. And wow, how fascinating. And they can take this matter that we think of as waste and revitalize it into being something that nourishes the soil through this process of composting. So I was at a composting workshop last month, and long story short, just a freak accident, I got was wearing rubber gloves, safety first, had my safety meeting here today, I got stuck with a piece of chicken wire that was in the compost. And it turned out that it took me to the hospital. I ended up being hospitalized for 3 days on IV antibiotics because it could have killed me, because I was being composted alive. And I was in the hospital, and this was shortly before Anders and another person from the community came and visited me. And the chaplain came by and asked if I would be interested in talking with him. And I'm always interested in talking. So I said yes, and I told him about things, and Anders and our group had been talking about this idea of signs, or this idea of success and failure, and maybe being open to when life is presenting you with this idea that things aren't working, maybe that's a sign in some way, and to work with that. And so I was talking to the chaplain, and I said, I don't believe in signs, and I don't not believe in signs, but what's interesting is that my passion project just tried to kill me. so what do I make of that? And I had told him about my fundamentalist, born-again upbringing, and he said, I don't mean to open any old wounds or antagonize you here, but what if what's happening is that the evil one or the evil forces are actually trying to deter you from doing good, because what you're trying to do is so good that there's a pushback from it, and it's this evil force. And then, I thought about that. That doesn't resonate with my heart. Personally, I said, well, that's interesting, because it sounds like you're thinking that there's this real dichotomy and this binary system of good and evil, and there's good forces and there's bad forces. And the thing is that, even these bacteria that are inside me trying to compost me alive, they're not evil and they're not bad. They're actually good. There are ancestors in a way, and they're just doing their job. And so we had this larger discussion about good and evil, and my understanding and what resonates with me is that there isn't this dichotomy between good and evil. There's just this process of becoming more and more conscious and aware of how to work towards harmony, knowing that especially as humans, we can make choices that lead us away from that essential core of good.
So before we dive into things, and we want you all to be a participant as theologians with us, I want Amy to share a little bit about the story that also happened in the hospital regarding kind of reconnecting or having an epiphany about good and evil and how things have influenced you. And the idea is that, oftentimes people, like in the Lutheran Church, for example, if you go to a synod assembly, a person of color might stand up and they're asked to speak on behalf of lots of people of color. It's really annoying because no one person can encompass a whole community. And a little bit today, we're kind of asking Amy to do that as well. But Amy's story is one that I think a lot of people we might know have, where they were raised in a very particular way of understanding Christian faith. It was one that was not very, when life went on, you realized it was not very life-giving. And so there has been a push against it. And I don't know if you guys have heard the term spiritual but not religious. It's a very confusing term. In fact, I think many people here would kind of wrestle with that one and say that that doesn't make sense, because I might consider myself spiritual and religious or something like that. So we recognize all of that and the grappling between it. But the idea is that someone is here to tell their story and why it is that they see the world the way they do and adhere to ways of believing in the way that they do. So,
Later in the day, I got a phone call, and it was from my mother, and I actually don't talk, I hadn't talked with my mother by choice in quite a while. There's a couple years that we were estranged because she was the one that brought me up in this tradition of Judeo-Christian, born-again fundamentalism, and is still much, very much in the throes of that. And throughout the years, I dealt with really extreme depression to the point where I wanted to end my life. And when I would come to my parents to discuss that, my mom's response was, "It's because you don't believe in Jesus," or "It's because you don't believe in what I taught you." And so that wasn't helpful to me. And so until I figured out how to heal myself, it felt very toxic to be in relationship with her. But she called me, and we were talking, and I had been thinking about my discussion with the chaplain, and she found out that because the overhead speaker went on calling for a nurse, she was like, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm in a hospital," and she was surprised by that. But we kept talking, and I was telling her that I realized that when I talked with her, I felt sad. Like, there was something that felt really sad inside of me. Like, it made me feel like crying when I talked with her, and I hadn't been able to ever put my finger on what that was. But years before, I had been in a therapy session where my therapist asked me, "Amy, just sit there and let me say something to you, and I want you to just tell me what your response is when I say this thing to you." And I was like, "Okay." So I just sat there and just like made myself like really receptive, and she said, "Amy, you are good." And immediately my heart went, "No!" Like, it was that intense. It was that intense I didn't know that was in me. But when I was talking to my mom, just last month, I was saying that I think the reason that I feel so sad when I talk to you, I'm finally putting my finger on it, is that I was taught by you that I was not good. I was taught that I was not good, and I feel that, I personally feel that we are all manifestations of a good source, and that goodness is inside all of us, and even me, and I'm starting to acknowledge that for some reason I pushed that away because I was taught that, but I'm letting that in again, that I'm good. And then I asked her point blank, "Do you think I'm good?" And my mother said, "Well..." And then I said, "Thank you. Thank you so much for being so honest, because that makes it so abundantly clear that that is the real infection inside of me. I mean, I'm in the hospital because I have hundreds of bacteria teeming in my system right now, but the real infection is inside my heart, where I don't feel at the core. I was taught to not feel at the core that I was good." And the next week, she called me again, and I was back in the hospital the ER for a checkup. And I asked her, "Have you thought a little bit about what we talked about?" And she was pretending she didn't remember. And then she said, "Oh, do you mean when you were trying to convince me that you're good?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "I'm not going to try to get you to say anything, but is that what you feel, or what do you feel?" And she was so conflicted because she had been taught that people cannot be good. And I said, "I forgive you, and you are good, and you were a good girl, and you are a good woman, and I understand that you are working to make sense of this, but this is the stuff that she taught me because she was taught that." And so something inside me has lifted since that conversation, where I am good, and I believe, and that opened me back up to believing in the essential goodness of the source. And for some reason, I had to go that way. Like, I had to believe in my goodness before I could believe in the goodness of the creative force and the source.
Thank you for sharing. Acknowledging that the vulnerability that you've allowed us to enter into, I wanted to take some time to be vulnerable with our faith, and maybe you can work with me in, like, what the dominant perspective, like, what Christianity is all about. let's just unpack it real quick. And this can be the one that you believe in or the one you don't believe in. But what we're going to do here is what I call, and others call, orthodox heresy, which means that we're going to be able to challenge things a little bit, but the idea is to do it so that we can find the gospel in the midst of it. And I hope that you heard in Amy's story a little bit of that in her own way. So we can kind of do it through the Bible a little bit. So if anybody wants to kind of join me in this, but when we read the Bible, the very first story is about what?
Creation,
and what about it?
And sin. Fall.
Well, then we're jumping ahead, actually.
It was good, right?
Hey, all right. Hey, God created us, and it was good. I don't know. What is another symbol for good? Maybe a thumbs up? All right. But, like, and what was good?
All of us.
Everything, right? Everything was good. So it's like, all right, that's a great, thank you, storytellers, for giving us that story to remind us as we start our journey in faith that it starts out with God creating something that was awesome and good. And then, what's the next thing we read?
Adam and Eve.
The fall, right? And we all call it the fall. I don't think that the storytellers wanted it to be called that, but that's what we've turned it into. And in that story, in a nutshell, what happens?
Eve eats the apple of the tree.
It's definitely Eve's fault.
Yeah.
They just obeyed.
Yeah. So sometimes in a chart, you might, like, if we're talking about, like, the good, here's good and evil or something, you know, goodness and evil, in the story, it kind of just goes like this. And what's interesting, a lot of people don't know, and Hal, who, and maybe others among us would be able to really get detail into it, but this is a different story. It comes from a different tradition, and most people don't know that it's kind of not fair to just make these links as though that these two come from the same source, from the same tradition, and that the point of the story is even to explain something that we would call the fall. Maybe it better would be like separation or challenge, or maybe the human condition, just getting real with what it's going to be like to be alive. But the tension of the story was really shifted, and so I don't know, we can kind of decide what this should be like. I don't know, maybe some people would say it's kind of like we have good days and bad days, something like this. And then, and some might say that the prophetic voice, I know we could kind of discuss how the prophetic voice, it'd be interesting to think about how that plays a role in this, the prophetic voice over time. But typically, at least in the dominant perspective of Christianity, what then happens?
Jesus.
That's always answered by
right.
School.
And, yeah. Right, and that's a good thing to kind of highlight. That's where we got it, right? From Bible school, right?
Yeah.
Okay, a lot of us did. So we got this Jesus guy, and can we try to do it in one, does someone want to try to do it in one sentence? What's that? Why is that important?
Brought the line all the way back up to
Yeah.
Reconciled.
All right. So all of a sudden, somehow,
paid the price.
This happens. And how? How?
Death.
Death? Paid the price. Paid the price of what?
Our sin.
Our sin.
Yeah.
So then this becomes about sin. And the way that it was paid was through death. And that there was a price to pay. And I'm getting heretical here, but thanks a lot, God, for setting this up for us. This is kind of, it's not very exciting to think that the whole thing involves death and it's all about being bad. And I mean, it's kind of intense when you really like unpack it. This is kind of the story we're told. And then what else happens in here? Because we haven't really talked about ourselves so much, except for that what Jesus did. Jesus paid the price for our sin. So does that mean that we're clear of sin now, or what do you guys think?
Well, the simplest form
What's that?
In the very simplistic thing is that, you know, Jesus gave us all gold stars and we're good to go.
Okay.
Gold stars.
So somehow these kind of come back over here. That something, you know, it's okay to disagree if somebody else wants to shout something else out. Or,
but it takes commitment to that faith, to stick with Jesus, to be
okay.
Live in that gold star.
Right, faith is a part of it. Oh, this is a good one. That we could do a lot on. We probably won't get a lot of it today, but we'll focus on this one. And they are definitely connected.
Faith, you have grace
and works.
Grace and works. And these are all important words for us, especially in the Lutheran tradition. And so... let me say, we're going off of the dominant perspective, right? This may be one that you agree with or are challenged by. But basically, we are, you know, aren't we still down here until we connect with this or this? Or are we actually up here and it, irregardless of connecting with this and this, right? This is a big thing. And I'm basically asking you, are you good? Or are you entrenched in sin? When you come into this world, what are you? And what does God see of you? And what does Jesus have to do in playing a role with everything?
Well, you know, I think about confession and forgiveness that we say at the beginning of the service, and, you know, God, we have sinned and we cannot free ourselves.
We cannot free ourselves.
That's part of what we say.
Yep.
But whether we all believe that or not, that's part of what we say.
Right. And in the older English, which I was reading about earlier today, it's a little different than that, and it's kind of sounds really kind of like, ooh. But yeah. So I'm gonna give it a try. You guys challenge me. The idea is that we suck a little bit, yeah? Like there's a lot of sin in us. And without God, we're donezo. In fact, we're not worthy. We are unworthy of typically what we would consider salvation or everlasting life. And the only way in which we can receive everlasting life is by latching ourselves onto something that happened 2,000 years ago that made it all okay, and that when we latch ourselves onto that and have faith in it, then life will be okay for us in the future. And that our sin, it doesn't remove us from sin, but it allows us to at least be reconnected to God. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, when we kind of spell it out, it's not that
attractive.
It's not attractive. And so what I would ask to someone like Amy is, you know, someone who has left, who is no longer connected to a church life, right, or to Christianity as it was explained, it's kind of like, you know, I can see why that's not really all that attractive of an experience, especially if you were raised to be to be told that you're bad, and that life is really about just trying to work through the bad stuff.
So can I give an alternate?
Absolutely.
Same story.
Sure.
Don't erase.
Oh, you want some of this? All right.
Because it's the same story, but I think it's a different perspective.
That's what we're here to do.
That God created. How we start with the biblical, God created Adam and Eve, he created them good, they were his kids, he loved them with all his heart, they chose to go their own way, and he did whatever it took, including death, to restore that relationship with them. And the whole story is God's love for his creation and for his kids. And willing to do whatever he has to, like a parent would. I mean, and that's kind of how, for me, that's, I mean, there were times where Casey and Corey were not all that fun to be around, but that didn't change my love for them.
Did it happen around year 13?
Yeah. Or how, yeah, recent was it? No.
But so anyway, I guess I think there's a, you can take the same story and it's not God out to punish and it, but he's willing to do whatever, including dying, to restore that relationship.
I like it. I'd like to add to it, but I'll, let's, anybody else want to add to it?
Well, the other thing, well, and this is sort of adding to this, but the thing that sometimes is frustrating is, or what I hear a lot of people say, Christian people, is that the restoration is future tense.
Mm.
It's
yeah, we didn't even
the
get there, did we?
Present moment,
yeah.
It's not now. And, yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Let's just hold on that for a second. Isn't that interesting that, so this happened, right? This Jesus thing happened, and then it's still not over. Like, you're still not good. In fact, the way how oftentimes the dominant Christian perspective, or at least the one that people outside of the church perceive as what is the Christian story, or the what makes up our, the story of faith, is that it's not over, and that there has to, there's going to be this end point where it really will be over, really for the final last time. And basically, here, this is what's crazy, right? And that when it is over, you either are going to be sent forever into some sort of horrible, abysmal life of everlasting, right? Down here somewhere, and maybe some horns are down there or something, I don't know. And then, or you're going to have this really awesome situation where life is going to be amazing forever and ever and ever. And that this is the whole point of it all, is to basically get on this side of the line when it all happens. And again, it's kind of like, wow, if that's from someone who's not participating, that's not a really appealing story, I don't think. Hal?
And just while we're complaining about the master narrative, just to notice, for me, I've lost any logic about how the death of one person could solve the fate of everyone. And then the second problem with the master narrative here, for me, is that it skips Jesus' life and teachings, as does the Nicene Creed. That is, you go from his birth to his death.
Yeah.
And so the master narrative doesn't take seriously Jesus' life or teachings.
Okay. All right. Is this a good time for you to want to jump back in at all? Do you want me to keep going?
I guess I'll just add that, you know, my dad was a non-practicing Jewish man. And so when I was 5, I remember a deadening of my soul, in a sense, because I was told by my mom and my church that my dad was going to hell.
Yeah.
And that was a real doozy to try to make sense of that. And that was actually when I was 15 and I left the church. That was that whole concept is what helped me exit it, because a friend of mine was saying, like, Amy, if you believe what you believe, then you believe I'm going to hell. And then I said, well, I don't believe you're going to hell. And she says, like, well, you have to believe it if you believe. And then I was like, I don't think that's true. And then so I went and talked some more with people at the church and my mom, and they were like, yep, actually, your friend's right. Unless you believe that Jesus died on the cross, then you're going to go to hell. And I was like, I just can't.
You want to go with him or not?
Yeah, and I just couldn't. That it just, everything about that just felt so awful to me that I had to leave that aside. And I, you know, ever since then, I've been trying to figure out, like, and that was a big gap, because every night I went to sleep until then, talking to God, right? Because that's how I've been trained, is like, we have a personal connection, and I talk to God, and then all of a sudden there was nothing there. And so I felt that void, but that void was better than the pain of thinking that my belief system made it so that there would be that schism, and that people didn't have a chance if they didn't believe this thing that I was doing about anyway.
So the one thing that we want to try, so we have a week together to try to unpack all of this stuff and to do more together. There's a lot of things to explore. The one that we wanted to do together and we're going to do for the next 15 minutes is really focus on this one. Okay? So there's other stuff here, and it's all part of, I mean, it all is interconnected, right? The story. But let's focus on sin, and we want to focus on sin's connection to this stuff. And, you know, one thing that we've kind of forget about or isn't taught very well in the church is this thing right here, this deal, this one, and where that comes from, because it's rooted in a we don't really think about these stories or the ways in which we are understanding how we came into being, how all things came into being. And God's role in it. And one is to recognize that these are different, they come from different sources, different ways of trying to make sense of ourselves in relationship to divinity. And that they both tell really important things, and that there's a lot of important stuff to be found there. But the one that explains it this way, then calls it this, this isn't really biblical. It's rooted in early theology. And we kind of push it onto Augustine, but he really can, I mean, we really can kind of blame him for it, but there's others that were involved in that. And it basically is saying, it talks about this in a term, and it involves the word sin. Anybody know what it is? What is this about? And it starts in the beginning. Original
sin. Pay attention to a commandment.
Original sin.
Oh, yeah.
Original sin. And so we've been having, Amy and I have been having conversations about this for the last week or so with folks. And original sin is basically the idea that from the very beginning, you're sinful, right? It kind of is confusing because it's like, oh yeah, you were good. God saw it all good, but then it, like right afterwards, you're just right there in sin, and it's a part of you forever, and that's why you needed this. And so this is actually a doctrine that is not biblical that now has become commonplace in theology. And what we can be invited to do and still remain orthodox is to explore what this might actually mean for us today. And if it doesn't make sense for some of us, and maybe it does, and we're not asking you to be anything but who you are and the way you perceive things, but for some of us, this is really problematic because we want this to be a part of our story with God, not as much this at the outset of who we are. So
you said you were going to talk about sin, so how do you define sin? I think that's the key to, I mean, there's many different definitions for what sin is.
Absolutely. Would you like to give your, and there's a lot to unpack, so how about we could talk about, do you want to talk about sins or sins, but would you like to give your kind of perspective on it?
Not now.
Yeah. So it's pretty...
It could go on. It's pretty complicated.
It's very complicated. So what I'm hoping to do today is to help us to at least kind of get it out there. And original sin is really kind of the idea, and some other people give examples or descriptions of it, but it's really like from the onset, you suck. You know? And that's... And someone else could try at it, but it's, you know, that it's... It really is kind of the actual what Amy's mom's talking about. So
it's interesting though, because you said you came from a fundamentalist, and I have never been in a fundamentalist church other than, you know, so I don't know a lot about it. But one of the things I've heard friends that came out of that talk about is the age of accountability. So I think it was like 12. Up until then, if you died, you would automatically go to heaven because you weren't accountable for your sins.
Mm.
And then at a certain age and whatever, I don't know what that magic number is, you all of a sudden become accountable, and then you have to be profess Jesus as Lord or you go to hell. So in that, I mean, in that tradition, it would sound almost like there isn't original sin. There's a 12-year grace period where you do it free.
Yeah.
I never thought of that until you just started
talking
about it.
Like, wait a minute. So here's a new take on original sin. And so this is kind of the fun of it. I want to say to everyone that I don't believe in original sin, but I do believe in original sin. And the original sin that I do believe in is one that says that from the outset of my being in the world, there was sin. Sin that I had no part to play in into my being, but that I have to participate in as someone who is in the world, in existence. And a lot of that is stuff that is retained by big behemoth systems. Big, big, big ones that are very difficult for us to move around. And I'm wondering if anybody wants to think of any of those.
Well, the government and any kind of war proclamation or anything like that is we're in the world with it, but it's very difficult for an individual to affect that.
Yeah.
And then other is the way we have treated the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Just the injustice. I mean, if you're born black and male, you're probably much more likely to be in prison than I am. And
even if you did the same crimes.
Right.
Yes. Somebody said once that there's no such thing as privilege without the expense of somebody. Any privilege that you have is at somebody else's expense.
I would even say churches that declare wars just out of, because if you don't believe the way we do, church or religion, other religions too.
Yeah. We were having a conversation lunch today that we were talking about how awesome Pope Francis is.
Yeah.
And then I was saying how we're so used to having someone say things that was really hard to hear, that someone who now says things that are less difficult to hear makes it sound so good. But yet, we haven't heard Pope Francis stand up and say, you know what, the next person who holds this role should be a woman. And it's about time we start doing that. And you don't hear Pope Francis saying that. So we have to remember that there's still a lot of agitating that needs to happen there.
Can we go back to talking about sin? One of the definitions that I heard of sin, that I'm not sure, it's certainly not all-encompassing, but anything that separates you from God.
Ah, yeah.
I just want to throw that out there.
Okay, what does that mean to you then?
You know, I think it really depends on what the situation, it's situational. It depends on where you're at and where your heart's at, and there's a lot there too.
Yeah. So what if, because I actually very much connect with that, what if this was less of the, it wasn't so much like this, but like this maybe still exists in some way, but it might be separateness.
Yeah.
You know? Separate. Okay, separate.
Yeah,
separate. And what if this is really, it is about our relationship with what is divinity and the unpacking of it? And I don't know, I feel like maybe you might have something to say about that.
You know, one of the things I've been thinking a lot lately about is this idea of our language provides a lot of anxiety, because we say, like, you can be good or you can be bad or you can be right or you can be wrong. And I challenge myself and all of us to think about that differently, in the sense of we are all good. You can't be bad and you can't be wrong, but you can do bad things. You can have bad intentions. And my understanding of this is that we have this essential goodness, and it needs to be developed through knowledge through with lovingly developed, rather than thinking that we can fall into our core badness. It's how do you grow that goodness? And so, yeah, this idea that we can go from being good to being bad, you know, I think it produces a lot of anxiety in people. And if we knew that it's just a matter of you are good, but you can be misshapen or you can be underdeveloped. And it's that the idea is that we're looking towards connecting with that goodness and having that vision of goodness, and that keeps us on track. And also with young kids, you know, when I was doing some babysitting of my next door neighbor who was 5, he was just so intense. And I just kept reminding myself, because he would yell and scream and he's so angry. And I was like, it's not a 5-year-old's fault that he's going through this. Like, I just kept telling him, you are good, but right now you don't know how to make sense of things. And so you're acting out, like, you are good. And I think that, yeah, that idea that someone could look at the development of a brain and like, you have to understand that up until a certain age, it's really challenging for a 5-year-old brain to understand how to not be selfish, because that's actually the stage of development. But my mom, I think that what happened is my mom saw us being that way and thought, this is proof that humans are bad. Because she didn't understand neurologically that it's almost impossible, and that we go through these stages, and that goodness is about developing that core goodness and helping to understand how we can succumb to this selfishness, but we want to keep it on track towards the goodness.
And there's not enough time today for us to unpack all of this. The idea is for us to at least begin to let ourselves reimagine, or to re-engage, or to reform what is so critical to ourselves and the nourishing what we call faith. And I think that what I want to share is that I believe that we are made in the image of God, all of us, everything, at the outset of all creation, it was beauty and love that created it to be, not this divine plan for sin and death and for it to be all about, you know, at the end, about, as you know, only the people who really get it right are gonna have, you know, a happy ending. I mean, that to me is very kind of disturbing. Perspective of what God would be about. And if we think about God as creating us in love, in God's image, with a yearning for us to participate in relationship with God, but in a way that we get to be participants and co-creators in life, which means that we can become separate from what is divine, from what God is yearning for us to do, and that we need a guide. And that God's love helps us to see that God was wanting to give us a guide as we try to engage in relationship with God. And so we get this amazing gift in Jesus. And that the Christian story might be about seeing that we have someone who we can connect with, relate to, because that divinity is like us, like a human being, and sought to be in relationship with God, and that we too get to have this opportunity to be in relationship with God, and that sin is, I really connect with that, with this idea that sin is really when we are not allowing ourselves to unfold into the vision that God wants to co-create with us. And there's a lot of fun, not fun, I shouldn't call it fun, but there's a lot of ways for us to explore this, and one might be through bondage, that we get stuck and we need to have freedom from the bondage that we have been stuck to. Another is confession and forgiveness, one that we tend to be most familiar with. Another one might be exile, that we have felt like we have been placed, you know, alone, on our own, in exile, and what we most need is return. And I hear that a lot in your story, Amy. And then another one might be more like death and salvation, needing to be able to see that we are indeed loved and saved, and that there's nothing that can separate us from this. So that's a little bit about sin. I think it's really important for us to be able to leave a place at least feeling like we had whatever we needed to be heard, how we needed to be heard is happened. So if anybody has any final things to share, we can take those.
I just have one thing that this isn't really the story that was told to me. I mean, like, I knew, you know, what the story was, but what the focus was God is good. We are good and bad because we're people. And so how can we use Jesus's life and what he did to help us make better decisions to help others? So there wasn't a focus on original sin or heaven and hell or any of that stuff. I mean, of course, in church there was, but my parents never talked about that. Just helping me be a better person, Kirsten.
That sounds to me like your parents maybe helped to nurture your spirituality in a more life-giving way than maybe even your church was.
Yeah.
And what does that say about our church?
Yeah.
Well, and mine was the opposite. My family was more, you know, that you're evil, you're bad, you're always bad. Well, actually, my mom, my dad didn't try. But the church, I remember hearing stories and just going, that isn't who God is. And that I saw love. I didn't see judgment. And so it was an interesting dichotomy as a little girl to go, why would we be singing Jesus loves me? He doesn't love me because I'm bad. He loves me because I'm good. And he delights in who I am. So it was interesting that the church was the one that opened me up to God's love and not necessarily.
That's right. And then you pray Jesus loves you in the morning, then you pray that God will take you if you die at night.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep, and if I die before I wake, oh, please God, let me go to heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So then we'd be glad we would be in a fundamentalist background, because if you're under 13, you're safe, you're in the clear, huh?
Well, the other thing is that wasn't there a separation between Celtic Christianity and Roman Christianity, and the Celtic Christianity felt more this kind of, that God was love, we are good, creation is good, and then the Romans basically tried to push that aside and say, no, I don't know if it's true or not. But
I'm going to divert your question a little bit and say, even before that, there might have been a community that Hal is here to talk about that cared about that message as well. And if you come to Hal's sessions, you might learn about the community rooted around the Gospel of John and how they... And other Gospels.
Gospel Mary says there's no such thing as sin.
Read about it.
And that's a good way. That's actually, Hal, if we may, this Amy had was starting to read it, and she actually asked if we could end with a little something from the Gospel of Mary, because it was connecting with us. We're going to continue this type of conversation, but we're inviting you not tomorrow, but Wednesday, to bring other symbols or things, theologies, metaphors that you are wrestling with or that you'd like to discuss, and we'll try to get involved into as many of those as we can together. And thank you for allowing an opportunity to kind of agitate a little bit. I hope that we might see that despite the fact that there's challenges maybe in the way that we perceive or the way how the church has claimed things, that the gospel is found and can be seen, and maybe we need to do a better job at articulating and sharing that gospel with the world. So.
And Peter said to him, since you have explained everything to us, tell us one other thing. What is the sin of the world? The Savior said, there is no sin, but it is you who make sin when you do things that are like the nature of adultery, which is called sin. That is why the good came into your midst, coming to the good which belongs to every nature in order to restore it to its root.
And you can Amen. Get more of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.